Welcome to the first official episode of the 99s Rugby Podcast, not to be confused with any other 99 affiliated podcast. So no ice cream chat here, although there may be some ice cream chat because me and Dav do struggle to stay on topic about absolutely anything and everything. Today's episode is brought to you by no one because we haven't got a sponsor yet. If someone maybe wants to get out there and give us a sponsorship, that'd be fantastic. Help us get our ideas off the ground. And if you want to hear a little bit more about what we're actually trying to do with all of this, you can listen to our sort of intro podcast, which will be on our system as well. And no doubt we put on our social media channels. You can find us at the 99s Rugby on Instagram. And we do have a website coming soon. So we'll update you about that when it happens. Today's first episode, we're trying to sort of, you know, we will talk about, as we mentioned before, we will talk about, you know, rugby in its main sense, you know, the England scores and stuff like that. I'm sure we'll get a little bit of that kind of chat in today, recapping the weekend. But we're sort of trying to, you know, look at other topics and stuff like that, kind of get off the beaten track a little bit and sort of discuss the bigger issues that are happening in rugby at the moment. So, you know, the focus of today's episode is around the sort of current issues with regard to, you know, high tackles, head contacts and the sort of massive increase of red cards that we've sort of seen in this last year or two for these kind of things. And it's a discussion, I guess, around whether that's a change in the laws, whether that's just the laws being enforced more, or if it's just a you know, an issue of players needing to change their technique. I'm sure we'll have much a debate and see where that goes. I guess over to you, Dav, first. I mean, where do you see this kind of issue overall at the moment? Where do you place blame with what's going on?
I think game's gone soft, mate. Game's gone soft. That's the problem. Door back in my day. No, it's I think it's a bit of it, and all of the above, I think, in terms of the issue at hand. I think it's reffed a bit harshly, if I'm honest. I think people have said it for years, haven't they? Since the video ref's been in looking at foul play, oh, it looks different, when it looks worse when it's slowed down. You watch it in real time, you think, well, it's not that bad. Or so-and-so's committed, he can't pull out. Someone, or the ball carrier's leaning down, he's crouched down, he's going to get hit in the face. I think there is an element of that. I think you've got to be protecting the players. I think it's got to be the paramount thing. That's got to be what the governing body and what the referees have got to be really focused on. I think especially professional level, because what, you've got 120 kilo titans smashing into each other, yeah, it's not going to be good for the head. And even what they've got, all that coming out of Steve Thompson and, you know, Andy Powell, it was Alex Popham, wasn't it, Andy Powell, talking about, or being diagnosed with early onset dementia linked to it. It's scary stuff. I think red cards are probably not the way to be dealing with it. I think, you know, 9 times out of 10, I wouldn't say they're malicious. You think back in the day, a red card had to be something pretty heinous. Like, you put a bad high shot on someone, it'd be a yellow card. If you full on, you know, clothesline from hell, swing an arm at someone's face, maybe that's a red card. You know, you stamp on someone on the floor, maybe that's a red card. But it's hard to judge. I think in the 100 miles an hour of a game, you know, it's very, very easy to get it slightly technically wrong. And I don't know if that deserves a red card. It certainly deserves, what, 6-week bans, 5-week bans that some lads are getting.
Yeah, I think no one would disagree that we all want the game to be safer with regard to, you know, we want people to be hitting the head less. We don't want guys to be getting early onset dementia and stuff like that at the ages of 40 and 50. Of course we don't. You know, no one wants that. No fan wants that. No average person on the street wants to hear that and, you know, read that in the newspaper over their cornflakes. You know, we don't want to see that. But yeah, I think coming from our end of things, I think you've hit the nail on the head really with, you know, that whole red card thing. When you see a red card in football, for example, it's because a really bad shot's been put on someone. A really, you know, a 2-foot lunge, or someone's hit someone in the face or something through an elbow, maybe even headbutted someone. You know, you see a lot of those. You do see more of the softer ones, if you want to call it that. Maybe someone just touches someone with their head. But I think that's kind of what we're seeing here a little bit with these tackles, in terms of, yes, there's not a lot of force going in on these. It's more of a technique failure a lot of the time. It's more of an issue of that. And it's just the line has been drawn. If contact is made with the head, that's a red card. So yeah, and it's, I guess the alternative is, people have suggested like an intermediate card, like an orange card, where if you make that error, you no longer take part in the game, but you're replaced by someone else, kind of like an ejection in American football or similar. That might be one route to go. But I think that kind of, I've heard people make the suggestion that people would then hit people on purpose. I don't think that's an issue with it. I think maybe the issue with that is that the idea is if someone makes that mistake and they get sent off, it's a punishment on the infringing team. Whereas if you can bring someone else in, it kind of reduces that punishment. But it keeps the game a better quality as well, I guess, because we want to see 15 on 15. We don't want to see, you know, games getting run away with by another team just because someone's made a slight error in judgment of, you know, coming to a tackle a bit more upright than they should have done.
So yeah, definitely. I think maybe the Coventry and Warwickshire Merit League, you'll get plenty of players looking to put a shot on. They don't mind 20 minutes rest to take someone's head off. I think you say about spoiling a game, I think the first game I can remember where this was really like hammered was the World Cup semi-final in 2011 when Sam Warburton got red carded for that. A bit back then as well, that was great shot, a dump tackle. You pick him up and lands on his back. You couldn't, it was textbook. And he gets a red card, everyone's up in arms. But that was what, like, it was really early into the game, wasn't it? I can't remember now. Nearly 10 years ago.
11 or 12 minutes in, I think. It was less than 20 minutes anyway, for sure.
And everyone was saying how that spoiled the game. And I suppose it did to an extent. It's not quite like football where if you get a man sent off, you can just soak up pressure. But it changes what you can do. Obviously, you've got more space to defend and less man in it, or one less man in attack. People don't really want to see it. I think you look, it happened again last week. Well, not last week, but the last round of the Six Nations before today, with Xander Ferguson's red card, where I think you look at that and there's a letter of the law, you say it's head or contact with the head, but Scotland are probably on top and it's kind of spoiled the game, and Wales end up taking the lead and sort of hanging on for a win and probably didn't deserve it if you've been harsh on Wales.
I feel what we need to do is draw some distinctions here, because if we look at, let's compare two tackles from last week and let's compare those sort of those collisions at the ruck as well. Two tackles last week, Ollie Fawley and Heptima playing for Irish against Leicester. Both players get sent off, but two very different red card high shot incidents, I think. Fawley's chased the kick, he's going full pace and he's just got himself stood upright because you sprint upright. And then, you know, as you slow down, maybe then you start lowering your body. But it's very hard to do that when you're going at full pace. And your idea is you want to get this guy as quickly as possible. And what's happened is there's been a head clash because he's coming upright. He's wrapped his arms. There's no issue with that. He's not led with a shoulder to a head. It's actually his head-on-head collision. And both players have ended up in a little bit of a heap on the floor. Fawley ends up getting sent off by the referee's decision after reviewing. The TMO, I think, maybe suggested a yellow or something like that, but the referee led with a red. So you've got that. And then if you look at Heptima, that's a full shoulder shot to the face. That is more what would have been a red card many years ago. So we've got this distinction at the moment where it's a technique fail against actually a bit of a, that was a proper shot to the head. And now that would have been a red card. And in my book, that Heptima is a red card and that should be a 3 to 4 week ban. But it's actually Fawley who's got the 4 week ban and Heptima's got a 2 or 3 week ban, I believe.
Because
Fawley's appealed. So there's issues within even the disciplinary area. And I'm sure that's a topic we'll talk about down the line. But then if we're looking at these ruck collisions, it's all about the height of the ball carrier and the height of the jackaler, which is causing these issues, isn't it? Because the ball carriers are carrying lower. They're getting lower into the contact area to try and make that collision themselves and dominate it. So that is opening up the opportunity for a higher shot to come in and guys stepping on the outside of people in a flailing arm. And I think the issue with the jackaler is they're so low over the ball these days. That flexibility at the hip and back is so good. They're so low. That's why we're seeing a lot of these headshots, because even if they do start lifting up slightly, their head is at the clear out level. And that's where we're taught to clear out, isn't it? In between those arms, trying to get off.
You say it's where you're taught to clear out as well. This current crop of professional players, they'll be around our age, some of it older, some of it younger. When you're a forward, you've been taught to clean out. Someone's got their head and neck over the ball. That's where you aim for. To really come in and put that shot and make it uncomfortable so they let go of the ball. There has to be a change. You can't be targeting like the head and neck like you were taught to. Excuse me. So you can't be targeting the head and neck because it is plainly dangerous. And you look at like something Sam Warburton basically said when he retired, like he he's been told he won't be able to pick his kids up because he was so good at getting over the ball. But then he's just got like 300 kilos flying at his spine and head every time he goes for the ball. It's not going to be good for you. But they say they've banned rolling, or if you I think it's all rolls banned now. I know you can't neck roll anymore, which is sensible, but
yeah, you can't neck roll. No, you can do the what they're calling the crocodile roll, yeah, over the midriff. Over, like,
in the white hot crucible of test rugby, you get in there, you're going to get it wrong. Yeah. And even, I mean, just at amateur level, you're going to get that wrong plenty of times.
The technique is not there. It's not drilled in as much, is it? You get in, you know, 3 hours tops a week of training at amateur sort of semi-pro level. Yeah, and any work you do in the gym yourself.
Any clear out work you do at amateur level, it's probably about a 5-minute drill where the emphasis is not on technique, it's on fronting up and bit of grit and smashing the shit out of each other. So I don't know what they do at professional level, but
So I think with the head collisions thing, I think we both agree with tackling. Maybe we need to punish ones like the Fawley one a little bit less. That feels to me a bit more of what we'd call a rugby incident, more of a head clash.
I think
maybe yellow card him for being a bit reckless, like in football, if someone's a bit reckless with a tackle, even if they win the ball, if they slide in a bit hard, they get a yellow card because they've been overzealous. You could maybe say that to him there.
Yeah, I mean, it's what the sin bin, I guess it's for. I know it's a call off. It's you've bit rash, you know, 10 minutes and think about it and calm down. And when it comes in, it is like that. And you can, when there's no real intent, it's not, I suppose there's actively reckless is a interesting phrase. It sounds a bit stupid, but you know what I mean? Like someone who's gone in complete disregard. And you think of, like you say, that one there, the Irish one at the weekend, or I think of like Sonny Bill in the Lions game, where he sort of just drops a shoulder side on. I remember at the time thinking it doesn't hit his head, it's not a red card, or it's like shoulder shot. But I've looked at it back, I watched it a couple of weeks ago on a repeat on Sky Sports, and it's a stonewall, a red card. When you look at it, he's not gone to make a safe tackle, he's just gone to drop a shoulder. And you compare that, I say that is reckless. He's not attempted a safe tackle. They say that you can say the Thorley one is reckless, because he's gone in high, it's head on head, but it's more he's just misjudged it reckless. It's not, you know, he's not gone in to cause harm. He's just, he's not prepared to make the tackle, but he can't pull out because he's a professional rugby player. You're not going to pull out.
If he slows right down, excuse me, and gets sidestepped and turned inside out, he gets ripped to shit on Monday morning in the team review and the defensive review. And, you know, I think there's a certain level, of intensity and effort that needs to be there. But it is, you know, there's a few guys who get it really, really right. You know, that slowdown. I think, is it Ludlow over at, is it Ludlum?
There's Ludlow and Ludlum, and they're both Lewis as well.
Yeah, at Gloucester. At Gloucester, he's Ludlum, I think.
Ludlow,
okay.
I think.
But he apologies if we've got your name wrong, if we've got you
if you're listening.
Yeah, you probably aren't. But, I mean, he times it amazingly every time, and he does hit at full tilt. So maybe it's a case of guys just learning a little bit more pace control for those kind of hits. But then, I think, you know, the Sonny Bill, the Heptema type ones, they are stonewall red cards. Do you know what I mean? And there's no discussion about that. And I think that needs to stay. You know, these double hits where people are dropping their shoulder and going in, you know, a guy's fallen already. Get your hands on his back and pull him down instead, because you're probably going to get a better chance of getting your hands on the ball anyway. And, you know, it's something that, you know, with my coaching, we've put a lot of emphasis on reading the situation, because if we're losing guys in a two tackle like that, an attack that's already going to be completed and someone's just coming in accidentally caught ahead, you know, and we're going to be down to 14, that is a huge loss for us. So it's about, I think, learning those little points a bit more. Control is the key word there. So I think with the tackle side of things, that's progressing fine. I think that's okay. I think there's been a few harsher reds, but that will work itself out. I think this whole rugby incident phrase will clear that up a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's the tackle is a bit more clean cut as well. It's easy to see a tackle. Everyone's in a more natural position. Like a ruck, you're bent up. It's not it's not a sensible place to put your head and neck, is it? Where you're over the ball, it's going to be the target.
I think that's what I want to focus on.
Yeah. I think in terms of the disciplinary issue, I think with the tackles, we're talking about, say, do you get a sin bin or, you know, talk about the orange card for a tackle. I don't think red cards for those tackles It's like a 4-week ban for Thorley, and people have got as high as 5 or 6 for dangerous tackles, which weren't really. Does that actually like discourage that kind of play? Because you've not done anything wrong, but you haven't intended to do anything wrong. It's not like you've, for me, like football, you get a 3-match ban for a straight red regardless. And I think maybe like really, if it's maybe a 2-match ban is fair, unless it's like violent or aggressive, it seems sensible. Even just a 1-match ban, or you leave the game for that match. I mean, the orange card idea of like a 20-minute sin bin, and then someone else comes on to take your place. Does it actually discourage that kind of play? I don't know, because players aren't really pulling out of these tackles, and if it's something you've just got slightly wrong, players are always going to say, or do we just have to accept that a lot of rugby games are going to finish with 14, 13 aside because people are going to make mistakes?
That's the risk, isn't it? You know, the maybe entertainment teams value.
Have to adapt to just, you know, we're probably going to be down to 13 some games. It's just going to happen. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, imagine being a neutral watching the Leicester Wasps game a few weeks ago and you see 3 red cards and a yellow card in that game. You'd be shocked. You'd think that bloody hell, this has been a real dirty game if you're just looking at it on face value. But actually, they were just bad techers. The only one you could argue had a bit of malice in it was Vice. Jasper Vice flew into that ruck a bit bad. I would have definitely given that a red. But the other ones, yeah, it's just poor technique for the most part. It's just or an unlucky circumstance, you know. So I think the tackle side of things will work itself out. I think it will, because it has to, because otherwise we are going to have a product where, you're going to have like red cards most weekends. I think this week, I haven't seen any this weekend in the Premiership, and there wasn't any in the Six Nations for that kind of thing. Although there was a contentious incident with Bigger, I think, putting a hit on yesterday in the Wales-Italy game, which was a little bit high. He could have got a yellow for that. I think it may have been a penalty only in the end. But you know, it's one of them. Is it? And we'll get back onto the Jacko in a second, because I think that's the more interesting conversation here, because I think there's more to discuss with how we can change that. But I guess the question is overall, is it just the risk a little bit? Do we have to accept this as people who are doing this? Much like if you get in a car every day, you accept that there's a risk that you might crash. When you cross the street, it's the social convention that people are going to stop at that light. They might not. Someone might get it wrong. Do we just accept that this is part of rugby and we're trying to do what we can to make it as safe as possible, but maybe people are just going to get hit in the head every now and then? Is that what we have to accept? Or does that make us bad people?
I mean, we're definitely bad people, but it's a good point. I think there's, by virtue of playing rugby probably more than most sports, you are accepting that there is a certain amount of risk, you know, to you. You're likely, if you play rugby, you know, every week, you're likely to get injured or at least hurt, if not, you know, out for the rest of the game or a couple of weeks. You're going to get hurt probably every season in like a tackle, every game. You're going to get, you know, catch a stinger on the shoulder, or, you know, get rattled in the ribs, and it's going to take a few minutes to run off. You accept it, and you accept it. I mean, I've been hit in the head loads of times, and it is scary to think, when we know, the more we learn about how potentially dangerous these head collisions can be. It seems unreasonable to say that professional players should just be saying, you get to play rugby for a living, but there's an 80% chance you're going to have dementia when you're 55. That seems a bit ludicrous if that's the route we want to take. I think that's out of order.
It's not like the cigarette packet, is it? We're putting the cancer risk on it. I think it's, we don't want to have that. Like I said, let's keep making it safer. And I think, you know, I think that the real thing that we champion here as well is it's not just the in-game, it needs to be the aftercare as well. You know, we need to, do clubs need to invest more in these contingencies, like having regular brain scans for the players? Do you think the players, I know rugby is not the most highly funded, it's not got the most money in it, but do you think players would maybe take a slight pay cut in the long run if it meant that the club could maybe put in place better healthcare? So regular brain scans per season, more treatments, more, if there was some, you know, investigation or research into like some treatments that might help reduce the risk of those kind of injuries and stuff like that, I think, you know, I personally see that as a really good way for the game to go, because yes, we've got the, we're trying to reduce the risk in the game, but let's look at our long-term care as well. You know, the HIA thing is fantastic. We're seeing guys being removed from games and not coming back if they fail, and having the treatment for the following weeks. And hopefully, you know, that will reduce the long-term effect a little bit and give these guys a full scare. But is there more that we could do in terms of the care side of things?
I think almost certainly there's probably more can be done in the care side of things. I mean, rugby's not very well funded. I think it's easy growing up and you look at like professional football, and obviously they're not comparable. Like Premiership rugby is probably like a League One level of funding in terms of compared directly to football. I think in terms of funding this care, I think it's probably got to come from either the RFU or Premiership rugby, or, you know, the governing bodies in each country, depending on, you know, if it's Six Nations, is it like the tournament as a whole? Is it World Rugby that covers it? Because it's expensive, and all this research is, you know, rugby's not got the funding to, you know, be at the forefront of that cutting edge research. And maybe you piggyback off the NFL. I know they're huge with their research. They've obviously got massive funding. I think rugby's in a weird position where it's probably the game, if I don't know if it's more at risk than the NFL. With the, obviously, they don't say that helmets don't actually negate concussion, but obviously you're not playing without a helmet or any head protection. It's a more free-flowing. You've got maybe more opportunities to get hit in the head in different ways. It's probably one of the most dangerous ways in games in terms of head, you know, potential head injury.
Yeah.
It's got to be at the forefront, I think, of working on how to protect players and how to keep people safe. You know, if there's, I remember when we were, I think it's amateur players, is it, you have to have 2 weeks with no symptoms before you should be cleared to play again. Never known anyone to ever follow that guidance.
There's a full sort of 21 day return to play outlay through the head case protocols and stuff like that. It's around that. And there's proper stages worked in there and stuff like that. But again, you know,
professional clubs, it's like half the time, isn't it? Which to me sounds the opposite of what you'd expect. Because, I mean, I don't know, you get a shot on the head from somebody in a club game. I know you can be monitored better at professional level, but for me, there's probably more at stake in a professional game. If they can push you through the door a bit early, they probably will. I was watching a thing on YouTube a few weeks ago about Jamie Cudmore talking about when he was at Clermont. And I don't know if it was him or if it was somebody else got knocked out. I think it was top 14 final or semi-final. Could be a European game. It was a big, big game anyway. And this bloke got, I think Benson Stanley got like knocked the fuck out, was in the changing room, like couldn't barely walk, was like spewing up in the bin. And then the doctor cleared him to go out again. And he doesn't remember it. I think I might've got that wrong. If you're listening, Jamie Cudmore or Benson Stanley.
I heard him speak. And yeah, his stories were very much that kind of ilk.
That might be a slightly out of date to right now, but I don't think there's anything past. It's like, there's a lot at stake for these clubs. You know, they're in it. They're in these competitions to win them. They're not there just to, you know, all look at us. We're a professional club. You know, if they've got a player who's going to impact a game and he's, you know, in trouble, do you push him out? But they say in the World Cup final, what Sinclair gets done after 3 minutes, and they pull him off, and rightly so.
Well, we'll talk about the World Cup final. That's a big point that people turn to, saying that you know, that was a big part of England struggling in that game. You know, so it shows how big these things can be. But obviously, again, like you said, Dan, I think that shows it case in point that the health side of things is the most important. And I think, you know, we're sort of titling this one "Mind Your Head," but I think that that is not just on the pitch. That's the recovery side of things as well. And I think it's a lot. There's a lot more management coming in for the pro side of things, which is great. And yeah, hopefully these stories like Cudmore has spoken about are gone. Hopefully that does not happen anymore. Hopefully there's no pushing. And, you know, I know Steve Thompson's sort of point is that he was sort of cleared to play or whatever when he wasn't fit. And that's a shame. You know, that's an awful shame. And hopefully this will bring change and make sure that change is consistent. I think because it's important that that change then filters down to the semi-pro amateur level. Because like you've said, like, I mean, yeah, I've seen guys who don't look right and then played. I mean, I've been in that situation. I've had a couple of few sort of head knocks and concussions myself, so I know how horrible it feels, to be fair. And yeah, you know, I think, you know, it's those days where you're in the clubhouse after a game, you know, you've had your few bottles of water in the change room, maybe a cheeky pint here or two, and then, you know, there's a bit of loud music on or something like that, or there's a lot of talking going on and your head just feels a bit weird. You know, you don't know whether you are dehydrated or you've taken a head knock, and it's, you know, all you've got as your tool of defence is, well, I won't play. And again, you know, who wants to risk, yeah, you know, who doesn't want to not play if they're not sure if you are injured or something like that? So something's got to fill down. I know there was talk about a test, like a spit test. There's a toxin that's secreted by the brain when you've got a concussion, apparently, which can be found in spit. I know that that test was apparently, maybe, I don't know what, maybe that's fell through. I haven't read anything about that in recent time. So maybe there needs to be more investigation in something like that, something that's cheap enough to have at Premiership grounds and have at non-league grounds. Because it's a huge problem, and you know, I think the more cataclysmic events for these kind of things have happened at the lower levels of the game. But we've got the stories of the young lad over in Ireland dying at 14. You know, he had secondary impact syndrome, yeah, well, or something similar. And I think that's where it maybe comes in a lot more, because there is no HIA. So it's the whole thing now is if in doubt. But if you're in doubt on the pitch, and unless you've got that about you to say, no, I'm out, and you pull yourself out, if you're a bit of, you know, an hard lad, a bit of a tough nut, you don't want to, you know, drop out, which some people do, and I've seen some people in that kind of state, it's difficult. So if there was some sort of test we could give pitch side or something, that would be a huge step forward, I think.
Well, you want something that's completely non-biased, don't you? You want an impartial thing. And say that spit test, you can't fudge it either way for a doctor to either be just a dodgy bloke or to be under orders from a, you know, a coach to be, you know, if it's 50-50, let him go. It's HIA, because they're done by the team's medical staff. They're not independent, are they, currently?
Great question. I've not looked too much into that.
I mean, for Test Match Rugby, Premiership Rugby, it's very easy to just get an impartial board of doctors for however many rounds, what, six games a weekend in the Premiership? Even less, obviously, for the Six Nations or Test Match Rugby, and just say this doctor is employed for this game. He makes the decision, not club medical staff. If he says he's, you know, fair as a HIA, or if he takes as the HIA, he's the final word. I'm going to say that spit test is completely conclusive. If it was accurate or something similar to that, where you say this bloke's done, he can't play. But you think about, like, you talk about blokes carrying on when they're in a bit of trouble. Remember the last time I got a head injury, it was at training, actually. It was a couple of seasons ago, the first contact session of pre-season. Went to tackle someone, got low and got a knee in the head. You know, you're not like knocked out, but you're
dazed.
Yeah, like you're out for like a second where you don't really know what's going on, and then you sort of come back. And it was towards the end of the session, and I got up and I finished the session, but I knew that I wasn't right. Like everything felt just like moving felt difficult. I knew I was done from the, like, more as it happened. And then it's the days after where obviously you know you're concussed, and like sunlight hurts your eyes, like noise hurts you, being around hurts you, you just want to be in bed. It's horrible. And I remember doing that, and I probably didn't have as long off as I should have. I was working in a warehouse at the time, and then basically I rang them up and said I can't work tonight, or the day after I was meant to be working, and then went back to doing that straight away. And that's physical work, and that's something you probably shouldn't be doing. This is the amateur game, obviously. That's a different pressure again. If you've got a head knock, you can't necessarily, you should be taking work off, especially if you drive, especially if you're using tools of any kind.
Or you've got the kids to look after. Yeah. You know, you've got stuff to do. It's difficult.
It's a weird thing. You bang up your shoulder or your knee or whatever. Obviously, you don't even think twice about if you can push through it or not. If you can't play, you can't play. With a head injury, you can feel okay. And I definitely think I'm sensitive to head injury now compared to when I was younger. couple of, was last year actually, was where first time I went out drinking after the lockdown sort of got lifted. I was staying at my mate's loft, climbed up through the ladder into the loft room, banged my head on the roof where it's at the angle. I was concussed for like 2 or 3 days. It was horrible.
Yeah,
I thought it was kind of over to begin with, but when it lasts for like 3 days afterwards and it's, you've had it before, you know what the symptoms are. Like you have a cup of coffee and that sets you off because caffeine's that makes you sensitive to it. It's horrible. It ruins your week. Imagine if you got, you know, some people have the I can't remember the name of the post-concussion syndrome. They're weeks at a time. They just feel shit. And how do you push those people back into playing? Or at amateur level, there's no guidance. Like, it's
Well, I think, look, you know, how many guys do we know personally who would have that kind of story? Where they've been either at a training session or in a game, they've had a knock and, you know, it's not been identified or something like that. So, yeah, well, if there is something that can come in at the lower level to be definitive, then that would be fantastic to really sort of enforce that. Because at the minute it is, you know, reliant upon people identifying themselves or someone else identifying, Jesus, he doesn't look right, that's it, 21 days, the protocol, you got to do it. I just did a quick search to have a look at what the HIA protocol is. So if someone is not showing clear on-pitch symptoms or signs, so someone is clearly concussed on field, that's it. They are substituted straight away. If they're not showing clear signs or symptoms on pitch, they must go an off-field assessment consisting of a clinical evaluation by an attending doctor. So this can either be the team doctor or they can delegate it to the match day doctor. So it is, you know, so it is actually administered by a medical professional. You know, and like I say, whereas, you know, you sort of amateur clubs and stuff like that, there isn't that facility there. You're relying on your physios being able to do stuff like that. And, you know, I will say, you know, I've been at clubs before and they've had that kind of thing in place, but it's like, you know, you got to do your tests at the start of the season and stuff like that. And I wouldn't, again, accuse anyone of fudging tests or anything like that on purpose, but there is a risk of how definitive is just this test. Do you know what I mean? Doing a scat test. How definitive is it? Whereas if we had something physiological marker wise, like a spit test, or, you know, if people were educated on how to do, like how the eyes maybe react to light or something like that, someone's concussed, something that would be more definitive, really, because that's the struggle. Because I imagine when you go in to be evaluated by the clinical physician attending at a professional game, it's not just a repeat these numbers back to me in the order that I gave you them kind of thing. I think there must be some sort of, you know, looking at the eyes, how the eyes are reacting to light and stuff like that. And you know, it's a difficult one all in. I think that's, we've covered that like there. I think just zipping back a little bit, just a slight rule change. So we don't want to spend our entire evening on this, I guess. We'll have a little bit of time to have a bit more fun chat as well in this. It's not all doom and gloom because things are definitely getting better, like we've said, for sure. Just doubling back to the Jackal scenario then. We've got guys and girls who are getting over the ball, you know, like this so low, the hips are, you know, below the shoulders. That's supposed to be off feet. I don't think that's being policed well enough. I think that's an area where we can maybe be a little bit sharper. But here it is. The Jackal is a real thing. It's become an art form. People are over that ball, locking onto it like a mother. You know, they're on that hard. What do we change? Because they are going to get hit in the head because they're so low. The ball is where their head is. It's underneath their head and arms. Like you mentioned before, people are getting hit in the back of the neck area. People are getting sort of hit in the head or wrapped around the head a little bit or something like that. If that player starts lifting his head up, where you were going to hit him in the back kind of area or the kidney kind of area to maybe get him to jolt and let go of it, which is the technique a lot of us are taught. If he starts lifting up like we saw with the likes of Ferguson that the other week, maybe someone rolling away from a ruck a bit slowly or whatever, there is a higher chance they're going to get hit in the head. What do we change? Is it the guy who's clearing out? Do we change him? Do we penalise the holding on penalty instantly if someone gets their hands on the ball and pulls it a little bit? Or do we get rid of the Jackal? I mean, what is the solution, man? What's the solution?
It's the million-dollar question, is it? It's like we don't know. Sort the scrums when they're getting reset and reset and reset. They've tried everything. I think with it, I definitely think that off feet is not truly off feet. It is those, they aren't supporting their body weight. You get people to not have their hands or chest on. I mean, technically you say they're on the ball and they're reaching back, but you get them to stay in that position without their hands on the floor, without something to anchor them. They can't, no one can do that.
Not getting hit by someone in that arm area.
Yeah. Like if you were just there, not like in that, the body shape they get into, I know, yes, they're anchored onto the ball, But you've got to think, are they, if they weren't, if they let go of the ball, will they able to keep their body there? Probably not. And obviously, your whole point is trying to rip the ball off them. So there's definitely, I think you've got to look at maybe legs a little bit more. There's that old fashioned thing of, you know, rest the thighs on the ball carrier anyway. And you get away with a bit more. I think you've got to, maybe it comes from that kid's level as well. I think, yeah, you're taught from a young age, really, you're clearing out a ruck, that you go into it. It's almost like it's a free shot to just obliterate it. Like, maybe you've got to take that out of the game from a young age, and it's got to be accuracy about everything. I think player size comes into it as well. I think you're an 80-kilo bloke going into clear out, or I suppose it's probably maybe less of an issue, I guess, as opposed to women's rugby, where they're not weighing as much. You it's easier for, there's less momentum. If you're, say, 125-kilo prop or more going in full steam ahead into a ruck, you're more likely to lose your balance, etc. But you can't pull out. If he starts, you say, if you're, someone's there latched over the ball and they start to lift up as you come in, you've not got time to react because you've got that much momentum coming through. The best you can do is wrap an arm and hope, if you end up clattering his head, is hope the ref thinks you didn't mean it. It almost seems like it's not quite a lottery, but it's, I don't know what the solution is. Cause like you say, who do you?
I have two little solutions potentially. I think with the jackal side of things, we maybe have to say the head has to be up. Your head has to be level with your ass. If your head is below your ass, you're off your feet, kind of thing. So that way they will always be with the arms extended, actually pulling on the ball instead of being on it. Yeah. You'd actually be having to pull on the ball to be ripping it, and your head would be up. So those arms would be there to be cleared out in between. So if you can't get those two or three quick pulls in time before someone clears you out, you didn't get in for holding on, and you've been cleared out, and the head contact is going to be less. And if someone does hit someone in the head, it's because they have come in at a bad body height or something like that, or they have targeted the head. So that way the guy who's clearing out can always get lower than the jackaler. So then it becomes a real art again. Like you say, like, are you strong enough to yank that ball and maybe rip it off someone or get them holding on, instead of it being, yeah, I can get so low and not actually be supporting myself that much that you are going to have to hit me probably a bit illegally. It's kind of a hack, isn't it, I guess. But the other rule that I was just bringing back in is the first person there can play the ball from an offside position. Because what's facing the guy who's clearing out sometimes in that scenario?
Your arse.
Now, as a prop, David, how many times have you been hitting the arse for a scrum? Full pelt by a back row on one side and your second row on the other side of your arse?
Every time.
And is your arse still functioning? Does it still work?
I believe so, yeah.
So I see that as a potential solution. If guys and girls are playing from that side of the ruck a little bit more often and trying to steal it from there because they've arrived first, or they're the jackal, or the person who's made the tackle and reloading, they're going to get cleared out from the bum.
Yeah.
So they're not getting hit in the head. So you kind of create that scenario.
Side on it, probably, at least. Actually, I've not thought about that at all. That's a very good idea. The one thing I thought of was maybe you limit it to one-on-one and only one defender can go in. But then it's too many defenders, and that's the kind of problem we have as well.
Many people on feet then and stuff like that, and it becomes like that. Yeah. Because I don't think you should not get rid of the competition for the ball. That is essential to making rugby entertaining. There's nothing better. How amazing is it when you get a big, burly six or seven who gets over that ball, rips it, turns, and as he's getting tackled by the guy who's there desperately trying to win that ruck, he pops an offload, and it's a counter-attack, and you see a try in that scenario. It would remove our main and best counter-attacking option outside of a kick receive. It really would. And I think we need it.
It's what makes rugby rugby as well. Same as drawing the parallels to the scrum again, where no one really knows how to fix it. The sensible option is just remove scrums, make it like rugby league, and then you essentially have two extra back rowers instead of a pair of fat cunt props. But
but the idea of rugby is that it's every aspect of the game is competitive.
That's part of it.
You're charging kicks down. You know what I mean? You can charge down a free kick. You can charge down a kick at goal if it's not a penalty. You know, conversion. Yeah. You can charge that. So that every aspect of the game has an element of competition to it, and we need it because that's what makes it great. That's what makes a really good test match, when every aspect of the game is that competitive and it's that intense. Yeah. So
not even a test match. You've probably done it yourself in a game where you're under the cosh a bit, and either you or one of your teammates, they get on that ball and they steal it. Either they steal the ball outright or you win a penalty when it's, you know, do or die. As big a buzz as scoring a try, and that's for the fans, it's a big deal. It makes the atmosphere, it makes rugby what it is.
Mm.
You can't take it away, but like I say, you've got to be able to make it safe. And I mean, there's bad clearouts and bad clearouts as well. Just say we talk about a bad bit of technique in a tackle, getting a red card, and then a dangerous shot. See, I think with Xander Ferguson's one, that was a bad bit of technique, a misjudged bit of technique. You remember a couple of years ago, it was Leicester Wasps, funnily enough, when they were down. I think it was the first time they played with the Rico, and I was there actually. And what's his face? The Fijian centre, is it Seremiah Bai?
Bai is
his last name. I can't remember his first name.
Seremiah
Bai. He got a red card for just headbutting, like led with his head, went in to headbutt somebody, did it, went flying in from like meters back, full pace, rightly got a red card. That's, again, that is obviously dangerous. And maybe you think the same way the tackle rules. Is it a bad clear out, or technique wise, or is it a dangerous clear out, or a violent clear out, I suppose?
It's like anything, isn't it? It's like if we
maybe differently.
Yeah, it's maybe if we brought in to say that, you know, people clearing out could come in on an angle a bit more from the side.
Yeah,
so they're going to be hitting people in the kidney area.
Yeah.
But then would we be sat here in a year going, fucking hell, there's like 10, 15 guys a season with ruptured livers or something like that because they're getting more kidney shots.
True.
But is that worse than concussion? You know, it's just swings and roundabouts, isn't it? It's a mess, really.
I was thinking in the England-France game, and a France player gave a penalty where I can't remember who it was or when it... I don't think England might have kicked one of their points from it. France had the ball, they took it into the ruck, and one of their players cleared out, and it was in at the side, it was definitely a penalty. But do you get rid of the gate? Like the good old days, if you can hit someone from the side, you take them out, you're not going to be head on head if it's side on.
No, I like interpreting that gate a little bit as well. When I look at it, if someone's lying sort of side on, they're more horizontal, their legs, if you come in over their legs, but on that angle, you could argue maybe that could become part of the gate.
Yeah.
And yes, they're entering on that side in angle, but they're going to get rid of the jackalope a lot safer. We would rule out those crocodile rolls, which people are a little bit worried about, because if you hit someone from the side there, their legs will lift up naturally.
Well, it's good reason.
You have to get underneath them and lift them up.
I don't think the crocodile roll is a brilliant solution. I think it works very occasionally. My brother, actually, our former coach, made this point when it was Jack Willis, his knee got destroyed against Italy. He said that it's not a proper clear out.
No.
It's effective, or it can be effective, but that is obviously another risk as well. I mean, your knee gets done, that could be career over. We don't know if Jack Willis is going to play for England again.
No.
Let alone if he plays for, you know, Premiership rugby again.
Whereas if I came on that slight angle on him, I could lift his leg.
Yeah.
As I hit him. Or if I do get underneath him because he's showing me a nice bit of meat, which is built to take a bit of shock absorbing, you know, the ribs and that, it's there to protect things, so they can take a little bit, his feet would come off the ground.
Yeah.
Naturally. You're not twisting him, you're lifting him again, just like you would do if someone was over the ball with extended arms and you came square on and got between their arms, you'd get underneath them. So it's the same kind of thing. So maybe that's a little bit of a fix there. Allow a slight degree, like a 45 degree entry.
Yeah, because obviously you can take the piss and then it's like, well, they're just going in at any angle. But like, maybe you widen that gate.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, having like, instead of it being a gate, it's, you know, funnel shaped. You can come in at a certain angle as long as you enter the ruck in the middle bit, you're not just flying inside.
And it's the ref's interpretation. And I'll tell you what, if you hit that guy and you don't lift him, you don't get him out of there from hitting him on that angle, and he still jackals it, fair bloody play to him.
Well, it's like I say, that the way going off your feet or going over the ball, if you're an attacker, rucking is interpreted. Some referees will say you've gone off your feet, it's a penalty, even if you take someone with you. Some referees, if you're flying in, you clean someone out, you take him and you out of the ruck and you go down on both on the floor, they'll say it's a clear out and whatever. Someone wants you to stay on your feet all the time. I think it's a bit different maybe at professional level, but it's where is a bit more interpretation. I think you've because I think the way the rules currently are, I think the body position players get into, and the fact you've got to come in such a narrow way, you've only got one place to hit them. And I think it's just going to cause injuries. Like I say, you've either got to go for the neck or the head.
Or the back.
Or the back. Or you've got to go for a roll. And say you get a roll wrong, you do someone's neck, red card, all day long. Or you go, you know, head, or you come in too hot, you miss your arm getting on, straight red, you're gone. You know, the only sort of clean clear outs these days tend to be if you've got there just before the opposition gets a man in.
From a coaching angle, that would be your easiest solution to rule out the jackler. And it's something I'm talking about with our guys this season when we have been able to train, is actually, instead of coming in as that guy, if you're first there and there's no one, a defender there, instead of coming in and just latching on and basically being like a jackler yourself, coming over like almost like an NFL offensive lineman. So that nice tower of power position that we always bang on about, nice and low in your hips and that, but the arms are ready. So if someone comes in, we're sumo wrestling.
Yeah.
So you're still secure, you're still safe over that ball. So as the guy coming in, and if you come in as a good support player and get that position, no one's going to want anything to do with you because they're just wasting themselves out of the game. Do you know what I mean? Because you do that, and then the guy behind you has that nice seal, keeps the ball within his feet. That's a nice three-person rook, a tackled player and two guys there. You know, and I think that's the way to go. And I think the emphasis needs to be, on your ball carrier, put a bit of bloody footwork on. Let's stop running into people. Every ball carrier needs to put a bit of footwork on to get to an outside shoulder, or at least make it, if that guy does hit you square, he's had to move himself over here. So the chances of his jackaler getting in there, his support player, is lessened. Because if we just run straight into people and they get you to the floor, they're either going to be able to release and get on you, or their second man's going to come in on the ball straight away. And you create these scenarios where the jackal is going to be there. For me, the jackal shouldn't be happening in the middle of the pitch in the congested areas. Jackal should be happening where a player gets isolated. But at the moment, it seems like a second man can get on that ball really early because people are just running into traffic where there's a group of people. If you're half a second too slow now, someone's already getting their hands on that ball. And I think... So those are the kind of fixes I see. Maybe a couple of little rule changes, maybe a change in attitude and a bit of a change maybe in the way of we're doing it. Because I think, like we said, the tackle is less of an issue at the moment for me. Bad tackles are still getting punished how I think they should be. And we just need to maybe clean up a few little bits of techers here and there, or those 50-50 scenarios maybe need to be disciplined a bit more fairly. But the clear out is the bigger problem here for the head injuries for me. Because how many clear outs are happening in a game? You know, there's a lot more head contact at that ruck, I think, than there is at a tackle scenario.
I think the way the rules are, I think it's almost, you can't avoid head contact. It's just whether it's deemed too reckless or too aggressive or just unnecessary. Or if it just look, I mean, sometimes it can just plain look worse than it is. I think that's probably what Xander Ferguson's been done for. I think he hasn't gone, I don't think he's done anything wrong looking at it. I think it looks worse than it is. One other option, I think, just for the, in terms of the rook, is don't have a jackler. I can't remember, it was a French second row, just did a fantastic counter rook, turned it over the good old fashioned way. He just blazed over the top of somebody, kept his legs pumping, got the ball behind him. It's your ball. Maybe it more of that of a pushing contest than it is getting your hands on the ball. Like I say, more isolated, maybe you go.
8-on-8 at the ruck.
Yeah, like this is a rugby challenge where they just form like a little scrum over the ball.
like under 12s. That's what I remember it used to be in like six man rucks, pods of four, no pods of three no more, pods of four.
You say we put a bit of footwork on, just looking to speed the game a bit more as an attacking team. I think there's a bit too much emphasis on running into people, and it's forwards not pushing it too far from the ruck. They're getting right in and it's big contact, it slows down. You speed the game up. People haven't got time to get on the ball to get in that position. If you are able to play the ball quick enough, the defence isn't going to be set enough to get them in, and you can speed it up. And it might be a bit scrappier, maybe. But I thought the first half of the France-England game was not scrappy, but it was open. Mm. And it was a quick pace. And that was really probably the best half of Six Nations rugby I think I've seen. Except for that England-Scotland game that was 38-all.
Yeah.
Other than that game.
Great segue, Dav, because I think we've probably said all we can about this. We've probably been going for a good 40-odd minutes there on HIA protocols, you know, Jackalers and stuff like that. I don't know if there's any more that we can say that maybe other people haven't said, or, you know, we've presented a couple of solutions potentially. I know you've got a vendetta against Bill Beaumont and the rest of World Rugby, apparently. But, you know, I think we've made some reasonable suggestions there for some things. And I like that you mentioned that the England-France game. I know we're not, our idea is not to cover too much of the big style of things, but a little bit of a break in here, Dav. What beer have you been drinking this weekend, mate? What beer have you been drinking?
I've got a lovely beer, actually. It's from the good people at Tiny Rebel. It's called Electric Boogaloo. Funny name.
Great name.
And it's, loads of it's a pale ale. I don't know a great deal on the different kind of beers. I like to try them all. It tastes, it's passion fruit, which I noticed, being the connoisseur that I am, I had a sip and thought, oh, it tastes like passion fruit, and then looked at the can and it says taste of passion fruit. So I've got a cultured palate.
Are you getting your detective badge in the post next week, potentially?
I am. I get the spy glass as well and a funny hat. My only real criticism, it says on the back that they have one rule, never make vanilla ice cream. You can't make a 99 without vanilla ice cream, so...
I hope
we're in a
throw that in the bin. Throw that in the bin. Yeah. We are the 99s. You know, we're not having it.
Yeah, but as a beer, delicious. Would recommend Tiny Rebel Electric Boogaloo.
Well, I've been, you know, not massively weight conscious. I like my food and whatnot. I try and be healthy as I can. I've been trying this weekend. I've seen a few people big up the skinny lager. I've been trying that this weekend. It's only 89 calories per can. So, you know, about a 330ml. Equivalent, so the same as a bottle, you know, 89 calories. I've been saving my calories, Dav. I had 5 the other night. That was, you know, a 300 cal saving, you know, and that's 60 calories between that and a standard beer.
And whilst we're on the topic of beer, I have found a new style of beer drinking, which I think maybe these small, like, IPA cans have contributed towards, but having just a small beer, not a pint every time. I've stumbled upon this. You can have as many beers as you like. You have more variety, and you know, it's easy. You can have just a little one. You don't have to get smashed. You can have two little beers, and you can still drive.
Well, potentially,
depending on how you feel.
Yes.
I do not recommend drink driving.
Well, I can say, yeah, no, I will big up the skinny lager. And if only we were touting two potential sponsors there, Electric Boogaloo or skinny lager, if you hear this somehow and want to sponsor us, we will keep drinking your beverages.
Yes.
I will transfer fully from Guinness and Punk IPA to skinny lager if they're willing to invest in us. But no, I think that's a really good point, actually. You know, a really good friend of mine, Rondell and his church group in Derby, a really Yarder collective, they're doing a big push on, you know, non-alcoholic beverages. They've just launched an online shop and stuff like that. So it's interesting that you mentioned something like that. It's definitely something to think about, because I think it's really easy when you're at home in this lockdown scenario to drink too much or to maybe, you know, find that little bit of boredom. I think it's about being careful not to find yourself drinking for the sake of it. You know, maybe have a couple of beers watching the England game at the weekend or something like that, or if we have a chat like this, we can enjoy a nice can of beer each and chat about them. But yeah, it's difficult putting yourself in a situation, I think, where, you know, where you're drinking for the sake of it. So it's nicer maybe to have a lighter drink, like you say, like a smaller can or something like that, where you can have 4 or 5 and you're only actually having, you know, 2.5 pints in that instead of, you know, smashing the pint cans or whatever. So yeah, great chat. Has that got a specific name to it, or is it just an unnamed method? Are we going to call it the nurse method?
I suppose it works as a double entendre. My name and you're nursing your beer.
Oh, Dav. That's too much of a dad pun for a Sunday night, I think. But
on most
yeah, great.
Day,
so.
Days.
So should we talk a little bit of this weekend? I know we've covered a bit of a bigger. Should we talk a little bit quicker this weekend? I know we've got another segment to sort of finish off on. This weekend, I mean, Italy, Wales, because that was the first game of the weekend. Let's go sort of chronologically. I mean, it's the same argument that everyone has. Are they worth being in? I will say yes, because it's the best weekend away. Going to Rome is the best weekend away out of all of them. Not to slate Dublin, Edinburgh, London and Cardiff, you know, not to slate, and Paris as well. Obviously can't forget Paris. And not to slate any of those destinations, although, you know, the French are a contentious bunch. Not to slate any of those other places, but Rome is probably the best weekend away in the Six Nations, isn't it? You know, it holds its place up there for sure. Anyway, if you were ranking the cities, it wouldn't be getting the wooden spoon for the day out.
That's but they are, done, Daniel.
Yeah, but they're
professional broadcaster.
But they're looking likely to get the wooden spoon again this year. You know,
well, they'll have to pull a real rab out their arse to not get the wooden spoon. It's impossible now, isn't it?
I think, who they play last is not Ireland. They play last. Who do they play last?
Scotland.
So they have to beat Scotland by a considerable margin and hope England give Ireland an absolute no, because Ireland won today, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they're done.
It's pretty much done and dusted. So what's the fix here? Because it's a real difficult one, and I don't want to spend all day on this because, like we say, it's such a covered topic.
Yeah,
what do we say?
My feelings on Italy is they have gotten further away over the last World Cup cycle, certainly. I mean, they've come fifth twice in the last like 15 years or something. Ridiculous. They've been, and it's not like they're losing the odd game by try or 3 points here or there. Like they'd give Scotland or a run for their money when Scotland were rubbish, when Wales were rubbish. They said they've beaten every team but England in the Six Nations now. But this year, they've been crap. Straight up poo. They've not been good enough. Do you relegate them? I don't know. I think that you're at risk then of just killing the Italian market for rugby. Do Georgia deserve a crack at Six Nations? Maybe. If it depends if they, I mean, it's easy to say that I'll give Georgia a go or give Russia or Romania a go. Are they good enough to beat Italy? It's probably the biggest question then. Because if they don't beat Italy, what's the point of them playing in the top level? Draft Japan in. It's a long way to go, obviously, for a Six Nations game. But Japan, realistically, if the World Cup's anything to go by, you'd probably put Japan in title contention every year if they play like that. Whereas Italy, no hope is really. I don't know. There's a solution that has Italy still in it. I think a Seven Nations is stupid. It seems absurd to push it to eight and have maybe two groups. It just seems like you end up getting too big at that point. And I think it's good to have a European contest. I think Japan, as much as it's in, it is literally in the Northern Hemisphere, it's a Pacific nation. It's better suited, I think, time-wise, as what have you, for playing those other countries, say the likes of Australia, New Zealand, Pacific Islands. I'd like to see relegation brought in, promotion relegation in some form. Maybe it's done on like a two-year average points or something. Then there's not enough games, is there, really, for that to work? Or maybe you just have playoffs. Because they have the Six Nations B every year, don't they? But then it's promotions done off of 2 years for that. I don't know, maybe that's the solution to get someone in. I think you look at the likes of Georgia and Romania and Russia that are qualifying for World Cups every year. They need probably better opportunity or more opportunities to play the best teams. At this current point in time, are they suited to, you know, corona-wise to go and play in the Six Nations? Probably not. I don't know. But it's not an easy fix. As I say, you kill Italy from the market if you relegate them, but they aren't really good enough to be there at the minute.
Well, just looking at it now, I mean, like I said, because I think we'll do a whole nother podcast on this kind of stuff. I think that's a real big area for us that we like to talk about rejigging maybe Six Nations and stuff like that, maybe taking Six Nations out, being biannually instead of every single year and putting in some other European tours or games or whatever. But just looking quickly at it, you know, Georgia have won it the last 3 years in a row now, and they were runners-up in the 1 year that they didn't win it. Spain have been second place in the competition with Romania third for the last 2 years now. So Georgie could argue, but we saw them in the Autumn Nations Cup against England, admittedly short of preparation and such, but they struggled. So maybe, yeah, I think maybe this promotion relegation, but maybe you have to earn your place. So Italy, if they were to finish bottom, would have to play Georgia home and away. And the aggregate score would give us who would be in the Six Nations the next year. And I appreciate that's extra games that have to be played in the summer when maybe they'd want to do summer tour, but maybe that is your punishment for finishing bottom.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know how excited the Southern Hemisphere teams are for welcoming Italy.
True. Like, true.
But they're a tier one nation. They have the right to go and play those teams. It's a tough one in terms of growing the game, because with all the best will in the world, you're never going to have a European Championship the same as the Euros in football, where it's not quite second tier, but you know what I mean? Like the smaller teams get a chance to play tournament football. Because it's an annual tournament. I don't think it's realistically, because of just the money involved, it's ever going to be anything but an annual tournament.
No. I'm going to stop you there with it, because we're going to get into other topics of it that we are going to discuss at a later time, because we will discuss that soon. I think just to round off then, potential maybe for looking at that, and we'll discuss it further. Yeah. So Italy, new squad, they play some good stuff. They look like there's potential there, but it feels to me like it has been for the last 4 or 5 years where there's potential but struggling.
Looking one at Wales, Monty Ioane, shit hot.
Yeah, great good player. Garbisi as well looks exciting. You know, they've got some really good players, and great to see Varney getting some time playing as well. A lad who's come through, obviously, the systems in England and stuff like that. He's got his Italian heritage there, so great to see him getting some sort of time playing at international level as well. Wales look like they're probably going to win another Grand Slam after playing terribly in the autumn. What else is new? I mean, nothing has changed. Pivac's come in and he's Warren 2.0 effectively in many ways. But to be honest, they were playing some quite exciting rugby yesterday. Yes, they're playing Italy where the game is a bit more open, but Wales looked quite good. Quick word on them, because I said we're going to rattle through the Six Nations. I don't want to spend all day on this. We're not covering the main stage.
Wales were sort of dodgy refereeing and whatever, maybe fluky decision here or there aside, were the better team against England, I thought. But I thought they weren't good against Ireland or Scotland, really. Not a team good enough to say they're Grand Slam winners of the first two games. They play well against England. I think France are the better team, but we will see next week. I think it's almost impossible. You judge a team how they play Italy, it's a waste of time, I think. But on their day, Wales are very, very good. They were poor in the autumn. They've improved, but my money would be on France. I think they are. I mean, they were not unlucky. England played well yesterday, but they're capable of better rugby.
Yeah, England-France then. England-France. Just a good game for me. A good test match. That, you know, it wasn't like a all penalties kind of encounter. There was a little bit of attacking rugby in there. France starting really good. I know the point you were going to make about this, because you messaged me yesterday and said, fucking hell, when do you see a team score a first phase at international level? And yeah, but I've watched it back today. I've analysed it a little bit. And do you know what? A very nice set play move that a lot of teams wouldn't have the invention to try and run something like that at international level. Yeah. So I think that's why that worked, because it was not so out of the box. It wasn't ridiculous, but it was nice. It was tidy and it sucked in those players around the back of the line out who are expecting a big carry. The lovely soft hands from Fiku releasing DuPont around the back there, and that created the situation for them to get that overlap in the wide channel. Yeah. Very nice. I liked it a lot. So that's my big takeaway from that game. But also, I think, you know, England have answered their critics a little bit. I saw Saracen's posting today saying, oh, but he's, you know, sort of all of Marrow again now, reposting his try and stuff like that. But, you know, I think it was just a good test match all in, and England were on the right side of it this week, which is good for them.
A bloody good game of ruggers. it was just a really, really good test match. I think the Six Nations can be a bit dull at times.
Yeah.
And that was absolutely not. It was an open game. Like I said, the first half especially was just a lot. It was very skillful, is what I thought, compared to what not that the Six Nations players, obviously the Northern Hemisphere teams aren't skillful, but the style of play is
attritional.
Attritional is the word. And it can sometimes just be straight up dull, I thought, but if both teams looked to attack, they said they're talking about it in the commentary and the analysts, they didn't really kick it a whole bunch. And the kicking game isn't a bad thing. I don't think that's boring in of itself, but it's when it's not attacking kicking, it's dull. Yeah. But the teams look to play. And like I said, that first phase try, it's rare at this level. And it wasn't ridiculous either. It was just basics done well. I think it's what is exciting to watch. I think if you're a bit of a rugby nerd and you can analyse, you know, all these dummy lines and you know, how the move's constructed to create space, and it can be a bit, I think it can be overthought really. And it was like I say, a good bit of hands off the line out, draw the man and pass, yeah, create the overlap and miss to the wing, and he's in to score.
I think they exposed a lot of the time off line outs. You see the outside edge of a defense will either come up really hard or will sit back because they're not expecting the ball to come there. And especially if it looks like a carry, which is what I think happened there. It looked like a carry, nice soft hands, like you say, at the line, you know, that sort of meter gap from the contact area. Two or three players have really pressed on that. And then the outside players are slightly behind that, which means then they're playing catch up as France are going forward, because with the wraparound aspect of that play off Fiku, it was always moving forward. It wasn't a deep pulled pass to a player then having to run forward or a line over the top and someone out the back. It was that little wraparound at the line interested, yeah, England just enough on the interior part of their D that they couldn't then chase out with that extra number that Dupont and Co were adding, which was nice, to be fair. So yes, a good game from England. And I saw a lovely picture of Eddie and Billy sort of smiling, sort of giving it a bit of, you know, told you so. And I think that's a great result for England going forward. And yeah, it'd be a good game to watch them play Ireland this weekend. Last but not least then, the game from today, Scotland versus Ireland. Another tough one for Scotland.
Losing, I didn't actually watch it.
It was a good game, Dav. I think
it seemed, you know, sorry, I've not seen the score. A late penalty. I think it's Scotland's just their, I don't know if it's, they're not good. Not that they aren't good enough. It's almost like it's got like a touch of like a curse feeling to it. They just can't get over the line. I don't know how, so I didn't watch it. I know that it was a late penalty to win it. And you get tight test matches like that. But the same against Wales, I mean, they had the red card for that one, but they just couldn't get over the line. And they've done it before. Scotland, when they get a good team together, they just never seem to quite get what they deserve. It's funny in a way as an Englishman. But as a rugby fan, they're probably one of the most exciting teams in world rugby, which is an unusual thing to say. But
they're at a point now. Yeah, they're at a point now for me where they're matching teams physically, both sort of in the speed of play and their little bits of nows and stuff. They've got one of the best fly halves in the world in their team on his day. Finn's great. He was good again today. Did some really good bits and bobs again today. And Hogg, arguably the best fullback in the world. He's in that sort of category as well. Watson playing on the back row is a Lions candidate. And again today. So it's one of them, yeah. So yeah, that will cover us on that side of things, I guess. We've spoke a little bit about elite rugby. Just to sort of delve in quickly to the European Shield, I've got the score up from the weekend here. So yesterday, Portugal had been promoted into that level. So there is relegation at those lower levels. Just saying, Bill and Co. And the guys at European Rugby. Yeah, there is relegation at the lower levels of the competitions. Portugal, yeah, promoted up into the sort of trophy, the Shield, whatever you call it, the European Shield, it's called, to be exact. They lost out at home 28-27 to Romania. So not a bad first attempt, not a bad first showing for them. I think it might be their first time for a while in that competition, at least, anyway.
Because they were hanging off the edge of Tier 1 for a little while, pre-2007 World Cup, which they qualified.
Well, they got into the World Cup, yeah, of course.
I don't know if they beat Fiji or nearly beat Fiji in that period. This is years ago when I was about 12, so it's just like seeing the scores. But yeah, it's nice to see them back at top level.
Yeah.
Well, top level, near top level.
And then for some reason, I'm looking at Russia and Georgia and the table for some reason. I can't see their score, but Georgia got 5 points and Russia have got 4 points. But they're the only teams who have played other than Romania and Portugal.
A gentleman's agreement to both have won that game.
Yes, I think someone has got the points mixed up. So Romania should have 4 points because they've obviously got the win there against Portugal, and Russia, I believe, have got a losing bonus point at Georgia. So there you are. That's the showing on there. But yeah, just sort of looking at that over the last few years, just give it a little bit of context and interest, and then we'll sort of move on, really, just to look and see, you know, in the last sort of few years, Georgia have been the champions 3 years in a row. Spain have been runner up for the last 2 years. So, you know, there's an argument that these teams are growing.
Belgium?
No. So last year, Germany got relegated out of it.
So you've only mentioned 4 teams plus Spain. Who's the last one?
Last one. Let me just get back on the table. Our last competitor to be confirmed.
Oh, my gosh.
So there's only 1, 2, 3, 4... Yes, so there's only five teams in it at the moment. So Spain are yet to play so far. So I don't know whether maybe because of COVID and stuff like that, there's been an issue. We might need to look into that a bit more to have a bit more of a discussion about it. Because I'd like to focus on that level, keep tabs on it a little bit and see how things progress. Because, you know, looking at the trophy as well, there's some countries in there which, you know, you just don't see them. You know, we've, you know, Czech Republic, the Netherlands. We've played out in the Netherlands, haven't we? You know, we played a little tour out there. Lithuania, Ukraine. It'd be great to sort of maybe, you know, Malta. We've got a lot of time for Malta rugby. See how they go, really, all in. So, but I mean, just looking at the all-time record, Georgia have got an 83% winning rate in that competition. So they've dominated it a lot. So it's interesting maybe to see, yeah, where they progress in general. Who knows? It'd be good to keep tabs on that competition. Now, we want to cover stuff that's a bit more out there. We've said that. We don't want to just cover the standards of like just going over the Six Nations and that. So, you know, we went a little bit in there today, only a few minutes. So I doubt we'll probably cover much else. But one of the things I think we've both spoke about covering is looking to cover Major League Rugby. So we're going to cover Major League Rugby a little bit more. And we suggested this feature the other night when we were sort of drafting things up. So just looking at this, sort of final little thing to round off this week's pod, because I know their competition starts on the 20th. So I've done a bit of checking. Their first round of league fixtures, the divisional rounds, it's split into an Eastern and Western Conference, is this weekend coming, the 20th. So what we sort of suggested the other day, and I don't know how you still feel about that, is just sort of, I've already gone a bit of a step ahead. I've put these teams into a random generator so we can get assigned a team at random. And the challenge is to do a little bit of a follow-up on them, sort of keep tabs on their results and how they're doing. And then maybe, you know, bring a little bit to the table every week. We'll do a bit of a roundup, maybe a little bit more in depth on the MLR every week or so while it's on, and get a little bit of input there, because I think, you know, USA Rugby is on its way up, and I'm interested to see this league, especially with the quality of some of the players that have gone in there. So
I'm glad that Major League Rugby has lasted more than one season. I mean, it's about what, the third attempt at a professional league in America or North America.
Yeah,
that most of them fall on their arse after about 3 games. I think, I don't know if they've maybe gone a little bit more established with rugby areas this time around.
The fan base is there for sure. I know, see Seattle sell out around 3,000 or 4,000 for every home game, I think.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's
no disrespect. That's not a million miles off the likes of Sale Sharks.
I mean, for that, I imagine, like, the Dragons probably don't pull in a big crowd, do they?
Exactly. So
at the minute, no one's pulling in any crowds. So.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah,
I bet you any money this weekend there's full houses at the American rugby games. They don't give a shit.
No, I was at the Super Bowl, like 30,000 people there. It's like some of them got massive.
But those stadiums are so big. Florida is wild, man. Florida doesn't give a shit. You can turn around, there's an alligator in your front room in Florida. It's a crazy place.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. I think rugby is massive. I mean, needless to say, it's obviously a massive growth opportunity for the sport. Because, I mean, America is sport mad, and they've got so many just great athletes who probably don't make it in other sports can transition into rugby and probably shake up the world a little bit. I think we're a bit stuck in our ways over here, certainly in the England and the Northern Hemisphere, where it's a little bit of a sort of an old fuddy-duddy posh sport,
Blazer Brigade,
schoolboys game, and you know, a couple of like NFL like dropouts with electric pace and something else might give the game something. I mean, this game's got a little bit of a different identity in America. It's kind of like a studious game, if you will. Like it's a thinking man's game. It's kind of like instead of like lager louts that we've got. So, it's been nice to see. Hopefully, the league develops something of its own identity and doesn't sort of try and get stuck in the ways of being just the rugby competition. Like any, like even the Super Rugby is kind of like the franchises there have kind of lost their appeal of being sort of like the different teams that they were. They're just like, oh, it's the title sponsor Hurricanes or whatever they are now, instead of being like kind of represented where they are. I think that they're in cities that I think have got popular, or rugby's fairly popular. I know there's a couple of teams in Texas where it's quite big, California pretty big, obviously. Is there two Canadian teams or one Canadian team?
There's one Canadian team for now. I think there's scope to bring one in from Montreal. I'm not sure, but there's the Toronto Arrows. I mean, I'm looking forward to engaging with this. I mean, I've watched the first sort of two seasons of it. Seattle have dominated. They've done really well. I think they've won both titles, the inaugural, and they defended it last year. There's some really great rugby, and I mean, Toronto holds a bit of a special place in our heart because we spent some time out there as well. You know, Rugby United New York in the Big Apple. I mean, that is a huge potential fan base there in one of the biggest cities in the country. I mean, you know, with some really well-established sports teams as well. And then obviously the party city, New Orleans, wouldn't mind getting them. So I think the fairest thing for us to do, because we both probably want to go for someone like Nola Gold or someone like that, is just do the random. So I've put all the names in. It's a random generator. What you get is who you follow.
Yeah, I'm willing to go for it.
Is there anyone you don't want, Dav? And let's go for it. Is there anyone you don't like? Because there's some great branding in there, some really great names. Like, I love the New England Free Jacks. I think that's a really quite a cool name. You know, the Seattle Seawolves, that's pretty cool as well. Old Glory, DC, the Washington team. I mean, that's a pretty cool name as well. There's some less desirable names, though, isn't there? I mean,
much like with basketball, nobody wants Utah. if possible, you don't want Utah.
You don't want the Mormon state, Dave. I can see you being a Mormon. I mean, that hair, you're looking very biblical at the moment.
Let's not get ourselves in trouble with the Church of Jesus Christ and the Latter-day Saints. They're powerful people. I mean, it's just one of those... Does Utah count as Midwest or is it too far west? It's one of those weird desert ones, isn't it?
I think it's Midwest, isn't it?
It's a bit dull.
They're in the Western Conference.
They are certainly in the Western Conference. I wouldn't like to have Los Angeles because they've got a stupid name. I don't know.
I don't like it. If there's any Americans listening, please let us know what a Giltini is. And also, if you're from the Austin area, can you please clarify what a Gilgroni or a Gilgroni is? I know what a Negroni is, and I tell you what, I don't like them. It's not a very nice cocktail. It's horrible. That's been recommended before, and it's disgusting. So if it's anything to do with those, I'm not happy. Or it's some sort of cocktail.
But I think it's exciting. I think the fact they've kind of established themselves now. I mean, we've said this now. Maybe come next year, the league will fold. And
well, they're spending cash. There's a lot of big signings. Chris Robshaw's gone over there. DTH Van der Merwe is over with the LA franchise, as is Gitto is over there. I said, Gitto is just in the LA team. They're spending cash money.
Badly Tendai, named Giltini.
Tendai Mtawawira is with Old Glory DC, I think. So there's some bloody good stuff. Ben Foden over with Rugby United New York as well. He's been there the whole time.
Yeah.
So
there's
some players.
It's a good league. So I'm looking now, they've got an expansion, which is good. Like the MLS obviously has expanded and expanded. It started off with not many teams, and now it's a big league, like 30 teams. Obviously, at the minute, how many teams? Professional teams. I suppose in theory, America can support more professional teams than we can if it gets big enough. I think. I mean, they've tried it before. Mills Mullay, you know, signed for that San Francisco team in whatever the last attempt at professional rugby was.
Which
fell on its arse.
Pro rugby, it was called.
Yeah, I don't know if they tried to throw in too much money at it beforehand or...
I'll tell you who did actually play there as well. I'm full on rugby norms because I watched all of that as well. They had a young, well, not so young, Mirko Bergamasco. Was he the,
very young?
Was he the blonde one?
He was the good. Well, Nara was good, but he was the winger. Mirko was the the winger.
So he played. He played. Yeah, he played centre for the. Was it San Francisco? It's one of the teams anyway.
Yeah.
He played for them. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's some great teams in there. Well, I'm a little bit surprised to see a dropout. I didn't see. Are you looking at the team list now? Because I haven't got them on my list here. The Glendale Raptors appear to have gone, which I was a little bit, because I know you would have wanted to go for them, because I know you're an avid Velociraptor fan.
I do love Velociraptors. They appear to have gone. They changed the name to Colorado apparently last year. Must have.
But they're not in there anymore.
They've folded,
which is a real shame. Because they were quite a good side to watch. They had a player called Harley Davidson who played on the wing.
That sounds ridiculous.
But I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing it kick off. I'm looking forward to covering a little bit of it. I think we'll always put like a sort of a 15, maybe 20 minute segment in there just to sort of keep track on how the league's going and stuff like that. And obviously follow our teams avidly. Mm-hmm. I think we'll maybe try and see if we can maybe get a shirt sent over, you know, purchase a bit of team wear or something, or a hat or something. Get it sent over from our cousins over the sea. But random choice. Now, I'll click it, obviously, because it's on my screen here. Do you want to go first? Do you dare risk it?
This is strategy here, because if I go first, there's less chance of getting Utah. But if you go first and don't get Utah, then I have more chance of getting Utah.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go first.
All right then. Are you ready? 3, 2 Ooh, Rugby United New York.
Oh, the fucking Big Apple. Go on, lads. Does Bastereau still play for them?
No, that ended very badly, as far as I'm aware. Shock. A Frenchman falling out with management. So I can't have them now. So this is a big risk for me here. So you've got Rugby United New York. That's who Dav's gonna follow. So hopefully I get someone in the Eastern Conference so we can have a bit of a rivalry here. Or maybe I get someone in the Western Conference and we get each other in the playoffs. Who knows? But 3, 2, 1 Houston. Houston. The friend Houston of Sabercats.
A friend of mine has played for the Houston Sabercats. If you're listening, Jack Riley of Rugby Warwickshire. He went down. His dad lives out there anyway. He went out to play there just in the league and got called up, I believe. He was dropped, but he's played a couple. I think he's played a few games for them in the first season. So there we go. Some
brilliant, well,
personal connection.
Yeah, well, that's cool. There you go. Bit of an investment there. So that means I'm in the Eastern Conference as well, I think. Is that correct?
I'll quickly check. It does not. No, they're Western.
Oh, I'm in the Western Conference there. Okay.
You have got a big derby now, though, because of Austin. Big Texas derby you've got, isn't there?
Yeah. With one of the terrible names. The Sabercats are gonna thump the Gilgronies. I'm not having it. If you're a Gilgronies fan, either let me know what it means, or we can have a bit of an exchange about, you know, how we're gonna do you in the derby. We're gonna give you a royal beating, so to speak. Yeah. Which not to be confused with any royal beatings, because we're British. We're not bringing the monarchy into disrepute or anything like that. We're not trying to cause trouble.
We come in peace. I don't know. New York, I believe they have a rivalry with the Boston area. So I guess I now hate New England.
The Free Jacks.
So, yeah. That's a strange name. I know you said you liked it.
I like it.
Maybe it has historical ties. I don't know much about the Revolution. So let's have a look at quick look at the New York squad and see if we've got any stars. You feel like if any team in the league is going to attract some weapons, it's going to be
let's do it.
Let's see. There's no Ben Foden. There we go. Andy Ellis from New Zealand, the scrum half.
Yeah, oh, yes.
He holds the record for the Bronco test. We did. So that's something. They've got a Brazilian prop. Oh, Wilton Rabolo. He'll do a job, I've heard. The rest of it, mostly Americans. A couple of Irish lads, Samoan prop. But, you know, a bit of Andy Ellis flair at nine. He must be about 45 years old. How old is Andy Ellis
now? Yeah, well, I saw they'd signed
37.
Him. I'm just looking at the Sabercat squad now. Not a lot of names that stick out. We're local. We're a local club, you know. Local. We although there's a guy here called Nicolas Kitikariashvili, which I don't think he's from the Houston area originally. I mean, I might be wrong. It doesn't sound like it. So that'll do.
That's a that's a classic Texan name.
I can almost guarantee he's Georgian. I'm looking at him right now. He's definitely Georgian. But yeah, look, there's a, you know, some good looking, some big lads, some strong looking lads here. Thomas Morani. He's looking pretty handy outside centre. But yeah, I'm not going to lie. There's not too many names that I recognise. So
wow.
It could be, no superstars. But hey, we're the scrappy underdog, the Houston Sabercats. Here we go. Let's go. Let's go, Sabercats. Let's go.
Rugby United New York doesn't fit easily into a chant.
They call them Rooney.
I will believe that when I see it, Daniel.
They do. That's not a lie. They're genuine. Yeah, they generally call them Rooney. Alex.
The
reporting for a lot of it. Yeah, he does a lot of reporting for it. So he's got the link there with Corbusiero. I think he lives. Correct me. I mean, you know, well, he probably won't correct me if I'm wrong. He probably won't listen, but I believe he lives in New York anyway. So,
well, I look forward to the upcoming season. Up the Rooney.
Yeah, man, that's a big. We've had a, you know, I think we've been going for a good while there. We've, you know, covered a lot of stuff. We've put a little bit of the world to rights in some ways. I think as we get more into this, we'll get a little bit more outlandish with our ideas and really let our bullshit flow as we do when we're just talking normally. But I think, you know, it's, yeah, yeah, the underlying thing is we want the game to be safe and we want, you know, the world to be safer in general, and rugby's part of that world, obviously. So it's about what can we do, whether it's the laws, the players adapting to the laws. I think that will come. That will come because we've seen it change with other things anyway. You know, but people have changed their abilities and attitudes towards things in the game anyway. And yeah, it's just a case, I guess, of seeing whether that is something that beds in and it just changes things naturally, or whether we maybe have to make a few little changes to the laws that we've suggested to make the jackal scenario safer and stuff like that for head collisions and stuff, because we don't want to see red cards all the time. We don't want to see lots of red cards, but we also don't want to see guys and girls hurt and injured and, you know, struggling with head injuries going forward. But, you know, other than that, and obviously we've got our little beer feature in there. Every time I have a little beer, we'll have a little chat about the beer that we're drinking this week. And yeah, finishing off there with the MLR. I look forward to talking more about that. I'm really excited about that and covering a lot more lower level rugby stuff in general. I think that's what we're going to focus on. We will talk Six Nations and Premiership occasionally, but I think we'll focus a bit more on the lower stuff, won't we? That's our plan anyway, because that's where we're bedded in. That's where the people who listen to this hopefully will be existing in those lower levels of rugby. And feel free to get in touch and share.
If you are listening from a tier two nation, quote unquote, or below, anywhere around the world, get in touch, find us on Instagram. We send us a message, let us know where you listen from, and, you know, give us a bit of a flavor of whatever culture of rugby culture in the country you're from.
Absolutely,
because we that's what we want. We see this, the wider issues in the game, and then, you know, a bit more of the sort of the fringes, I guess, of rugby, the more worldwide culture of it. I think there's more qualified people than us to talk about the professional game. So, you know, we'll talk about what's popping at the lower levels. You know, the real people, the little guy.
Yeah. And speaking of social media, you can find us at the 99s Rugby on Instagram. You can find me at DanWoods95 on Instagram myself if you want to follow there. And he is...
You
don't know what your own handle is?
No.
Dave may accept you if you were.
If you can find me, nice. You can follow me. I am at Nurse Doggy, all one word, Doggy. You find me.
And yeah, hope everyone's enjoyed listening. And yeah, it's been a nice long one to get the sort of train moving. But I think as we get better at this, this is our first time as well. So it's, you know, just seeing what we can get done. And hopefully, yeah, people take something from it. And if you want to engage with us, you know, maybe even give us a bit of stick. We're pretty thick skinned. We're happy to debate and talk about things. So yeah, get in touch. And again, if there's any potential sponsors out there who want to give us some money to help us get the Sevens program off the ground and really potentially make a difference for rugby sevens in the UK and possibly wider afield, then that'd be fantastic. Yeah, please get in touch and engage with us and we'll see what we can do. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening.
Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.